Whenever I hear about impact investing, I always get the feeling that it will have a lot of impact, but not much of returns. And that's one of those rare products where impact and returns go hand in hand.
Now, the returns are heavily reliant on the price of the carbon credits. With the prices, what we see now in the market, the expected IRR would fluctuate between like 18 to 28%.
Even the researcher says that the financial gap in agriculture is up to 40 billion euro. So it takes many platforms like ours and a lot of money to solve that gap. So there will be space for everybody to put their money in agriculture.
As you know, on heavy finance, it is not free to be late. So the farmers are charged the delay interest. So I think the investors really love the farmers who are late, but then pay back with the delay interest.
We are entering that interesting period of time, July, August, when all the farmers will be in harvesting. Then we call them that you're being, let's say, 30 days late, and then you get an answer, if you want to help me with the harvesting, please come to my field. We will quickly do the job, and then you will get your repayment faster.
Welcome back to yet another episode on the Rethink Peer-to-Peer Lending podcast. In today's episode, we're having two of the three founders from Heavy Finance. We got on one side Andrius Liukaitis, who is the CFO of the platform, and on the other side, Darius Versekas, CMO of Heavy Finance. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time today and answering a couple of my questions.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having us.
All right, then to start off, maybe for anyone that's coming across this podcast or this interview, curious about Heavy Finance, maybe you can introduce your platform in just a couple of sentences. What is Heavy Finance all about? In maybe just a few sentences to start off.
Yeah, Heavy Finance is not your usual investment platform. We're a climate technology company, first of all, so all your investments also have a very big impact and positive impact on climate and society. Generally, our approach is to facilitate funding to farmers because they are at the forefront of climate change battle. They already feel it. There's no farmer who would say that climate change does not exist. And we saw that with a lot of security measures that this sector have because of its strategic importance. It's a great sector for investors where loans are probably more secured than in many other sectors.
Hmm. Andrius, maybe anything to add?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, we provide the financing for the farmers. The loans are collateralized by land, by the heavy machinery, you know, and the farmers use that proceeds basically to expand and make their business more effective, therefore feeding the world or the population and battling the global warming.
Hmm. Obviously, agriculture, from my perspective, is a topic that really like picked up pace in the recent years. So I feel like you're right on time, you know, like really filling that niche and getting into that that market. Now, I'm curious from an investor perspective, like, you know, there's so many platforms out there, and even in the agriculture niche, it's, you know, quite growing, I would say. What would you say are the USPs that Heavy Finance can offer compared to other competitors?
Yeah, so one of the things, Heavy Finance, I suppose, is the largest one out of those platforms. It means that we have many more investment opportunities. At any given moment, you will see 12, 14 open loans waiting for investments. And also, there's a lot of different profile of those loans of short to medium term. So you can have it backed by land, by heavy equipment. There are some uncollateralized working capital, smaller loans. There's also state guarantees, and there's also our green loans. So we have a very wide portfolio of products that investors can choose depending on the risk profile they like, return profile, and security measures. So it opens a pretty wide sphere where investors can define their own strategy and understand how they want to approach the investments in agriculture. And I suppose that's the good part for many investors, that a lot of them don't have agriculture in their portfolio. So it's an asset that they can, first of all, diversify. And secondly, in times of economic uncertainty, agriculture provides an interesting opportunity of living in a different economic cycles, raising prices of real estate, let's say, or general economic uncertainty does not touch it that much. For them, more important parts are sun, rain, and fertilizers.
Yeah, I would also add, you know, that we are providing the loans to the farmers in five different countries, spanning from Portugal to Bulgaria to Lithuania, and the farmers there have actually different farming cycles and different products. So, you know, the majority of the farmers in Lithuania are grain growers, while in Portugal you can finance vineyards. You know, in Bulgaria you can finance the farmers who are growing nuts or herbs. So you can also diversify your investments on the geographical level as well as on the farming industry level.
Good point. Before we dig deeper into the product offering of Heavy Finance, there's a personal question, a personal interest of mine, obviously, how all you guys met in the end. So from my understanding, you're like three founders. And I know you, Andrius, we know each other for quite some time. We have met back then in, I think, 2019 already at Neo Finance. Limona's obviously big core pillar from the development of Finbi. What happened that you three founders met each other? What's the connection and the story behind?
Yeah, actually, it came from the inside, from the person who later became our business angel, Rytis. You had a lot of knowledge in the market, and his problem was that he wanted to sell more heavy equipment to the farmers. He was complaining that, well, small and medium sized farms struggle to get access to financing to actually get the better equipment and grow faster. And then Limonas and Andrius combined their knowledge to solve that problem, and thought it makes sense. And there's a lot of proofs that actually there's a massive gap in the market to fund these loans, while the security measures are there. It's just those farmers are too small for the banks, and it opens an interesting niche. And then my background was in journalism, so I joined from the marketing perspective to explain our story and to tell how we operate. So yeah, that happened 3 years ago, and now we have a portfolio of loans issued of nearly 40 million.
Okay, so the common contact has been a business angel, if I understood it correctly, that kind of put together the pieces and said, maybe Andrius, you could, you know, have a chat with Limonas and you could get together, think about this idea, or how did the story evolve basically from scratch?
Well, he was talking to Limonas. They were on the trip from skiing. It was already COVID time starting. And they were talking about the problem, and Limonas was very hooked on it, that, gosh, it's actually an interesting problem, especially having his background with Finbi. He clearly saw a path how we can solve it. And then he started talking with me and Andrius that, hey, guys, maybe let's do it. And we thought, yeah, actually, it has a lot of meaning. And then we understood that, well, it's not only just lending farmers and then helping them to purchase new equipment. With every single loan, we can also have an impact on the environment, because when you're facilitating financing, you can actually shift the farmer's mind that, okay, if you need money to expand your farm, maybe do it in a more sustainable way. And actually, agriculture, one thing is one of the bigger polluters in the world, but another thing is it has an enormous potential to store CO2 emissions in the soil. So when we understood that, our mindset changed completely in terms of how agriculture should operate. And we started hiring people who have more in-depth knowledge in agriculture and who can actually help farmers and educate them how they can grow more while having a more positive impact on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually interesting. Whenever I hear about impact investing, I always get the feeling that they will have a lot of impact, but not much of returns. And that's one of those rare products where impact and returns go hand in hand. So it becomes very convenient, especially in countries like Germany, where investors are clearly more cautious about the impact of their investments. And they start requiring companies that they work with to have that positive impact on the environment.
Hmm. One of my follow-up questions, maybe for you, Andrius, the transition basically being or having a background that is more consumer loan driven, unsecured consumer loans, and obviously switching to agricultural products that come along with different collateral, different securities. How was this transition also within the founding team? Because obviously also with Finbi, it's strongly focused on unsecured consumer loans. So how was this transition then also operating in a, let's say, totally different credit niche, so to say? So how did you gather then also the knowledge to, you know, continue on with this idea of setting up Heavy Finance?
Yes, so to be honest, you know, it's not a completely different niche. You know, one thing is that when I was with Neo Finance, right, we also, like the same shareholders, had some other companies providing business loans. Finbi also had a separate niche where they financed the businesses. So the knowledge was partly there. You know, what we had to shift is to combine the knowledge from the unsecured consumer lending and the business lending, SME lending, right, to agricultural lending. So when you look at the farmer and how you need to underwrite him, so essentially he's an individual doing the business. So we had that knowledge. What we do when we underwrite them, we gather the financial statements. We underwrite it the same way as the banks do, with all the ratios, with the and we evaluate the farmer's probability to pay back the loan without using the collateral. You know, in our case, the collateral is like the plan B. If the farmer will not pay back the loan, then we use the collateral. It was not that hard to shift that. And I know the other interesting part is that how the farmer is different than the business, that he has a personal liability to pay back the loan. Now, if he is not doing the farmer on the limited liability company, then he personally is responsible to pay back the loan. So that's the same as in consumer lending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. It's actually very important to understand this part that farmers are personally liable. So we always encourage people to analyze not only the collateral, because that's the last resort. First of all, you're still analyzing the business, like issuing a business loan. You look at profit loss statement, balance sheets. Well, what are the fundamentals of the business behind? And only then you look at the collateral.
Mm. All right. Now I want to shift to the loan offering on Heavy Finance. Obviously, it's heavily focused on agricultural loans. But recently, at the beginning of the year, you launched something completely new, which is called Green Loans, which allows investors to have access to the carbon certificate market. Can you talk about this idea in general, like to get an understanding for investors? What is this all about? What are the benefits? How does it work? If you can elaborate on this, please.
Yeah, I suppose many people heard somewhere about mandatory carbon market where the biggest polluters in our countries have to offset their emissions by pretty much buying good works done somewhere else. And what happened with supranational institutions like United Nations, voluntary carbon credit market was born, where companies who are not obliged to offset their emissions can do that. So, for example, it's banks, shopping malls, all the big corporations, they're seeking to be carbon neutral, and they're buying those voluntary carbon credits to make that. So they're paying for the good jobs for environment done. And we understood that farmers are actually the ones who can store a lot of CO2 emissions in their soil, and that will increase their yields by using a technology called no-till farming. It's nothing new. It was born right after World War II. So it's a proven technology that has lots of years of usage. It's just it costs a little bit more to ship to it. So farmers have been a little bit hesitant. In each country, you can see the adoption of like 10% of this practice. But basically, they're moving towards it, and our aim is to facilitate it. And by doing that, we're allowing investors to have an exposure to carbon credit market. And if you see the analysis and what prestigious analysts are talking about this market, so in 2021, this voluntary carbon credit market was roughly 2 billion euro. But the estimation says that by 2030 should grow to 50 billion euro. And that is where the demand from all the corporations is so big that the price is constantly going up. And we understood that for investors, it's an interesting opportunity to actually make lucrative returns while having a massive impact and having the same security as for regular loans. Because everything that Andrew's just talked about, how we secure the loans, everything works. We still take the collateral. There's still a personal liability for that loan. So you don't get the returns right away or every month. You're getting the repayments. But once those carbon credits are generated in the land, and that happens every couple of years, you get your returns on those moments. So it's a little bit different structure, and it's a little bit different product. And actually, especially in Germany, we saw a lot of interest, and we already funded around 2 million euro of these loans being then launched end of first quarter, I suppose, of this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting concept, which for me, at least, I feel like Heavy Finance is kind of pioneering on this, or really is like flagging this topic. We can see on the main website, you want to help remove 1 gigaton of CO2 emissions by 2050. I was wondering, how would you translate this into like funded loan volume? So how much would have need to be invested from investor side to, you know, get to this goal?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Actually, perfect question. So it's 1 gigaton, but there are some farmers who actually love the product so much, they said, we don't need the money. We're good with the money, but we want to join the program and we want carbon credits to be generated in our farms. So we also opened them this opportunity that they're joining our carbon farming program, but they're not listing their loans on the platform. So therefore, it is a little bit unclear how much money there will be, because the biggest farms with 1,000 and more hectares quite often join without taking a loan. So by the end of the year, we're expecting to have around 100,000 hectares enrolled, together with green loans and that carbon farming program. That would be roughly 250,000 tons of CO2 removed from the atmosphere. So that's a big number, but definitely in terms of green loans, it means more in hundreds of millions funded to reach that gigaton.
Mm. So still plenty of time also to grow for Heavy Finance then as well. Maybe one last question to wrap up the topic on the green loans. I try to get an understanding about the topic, and you know, I don't want to focus all the interview solely on this, but just one last question. I was wondering the loan term. How does it work? How long will investors need to tie their money to this product? How does it work with the return? But mostly, like, how long is the money really attached then to this loan, in a sense, and how does it develop with the returns throughout the years?
Yes. So currently, you know, we have a product where you lend your money to the farmer for 3 or maximum 4 years, and you get your capital back in that time, right? But you get the proceeds from the sale of the carbon credits for 10 years. So it's an interesting concept, you know, where during that 10-year period, while you are getting the returns, you can flip that money 3 times. Like your initial investment. Now the returns are heavily reliant on the price of the carbon credits. With the prices what we see now in the market, the expected IRR would fluctuate between like 18 to 28%. That's like the yearly return, but you know, with every increase in the carbon credit price, and we see the huge demand for it, and we see that it should actually grow looking into the future, so the returns can be even higher. But I don't want to speculate on this topic. I think the IRR which we have now is really attractive, but it might get even more attractive in the future.
I think this ties also into another topic, which you have answered in a previous conversation that we had, which was the willingness of investors to tie their money, basically, and also the, let's say, demand from your borrowers to get loans with a term of 5 to 10 years. But you said there's still, you know, not enough demand from investor side, and on the other hand. So this topic kind of ties a little bit into it when we talk about 3 to 4 years. How do you in general balance those expectations from both sides, and how much bigger would you consider the potential to be, you know, in terms of the funded loan volume if you were able to fund also those longer terms of 5 to 10 years?
I think that would really make more farmers borrow from our investors. Actually, we saw the influx of the investors who are registering on our platform. We also have some institutional interest, you know, so I think that in the near future we will see, you know, the prolongation of the term. I think that, you know, in the environment where the interest rates are increasing, I mean the Euribor, right? So there are more and more investors willing to part ways with their money for a longer period of time. We have a bunch of the investors, you know, who just want to invest into the loan and, you know, forget about the money for 5 years. They just wanted to generate the income, you know, and make an impact. So I think that, you know, we will widen our range just to satisfy the needs of both, you know, the short-term investors and the long-term as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so currently we have nearly 9,000 investors on the platform, and they finance around 2 million a month. But we see that actually our product is very much needed, so from the farmer side. So I suppose we could reach 5 million a month pretty quickly, especially when more institutional capital joins. So we currently have one institutional capital provider from Switzerland, but we see that this asset class of collateralized agricultural loans is picking up, not only in the retail investors' mind, but also in the institutionals. So that should give even more opportunities. I know that some retail investors are getting scared that institutional capital is joining and there will be no space, but this market is enormously big, and the problems in it are quite massive. Even the research says that the financial gap in agriculture is up to 40 billion euro. So it takes many platforms like ours and a lot of money to solve that gap. So there will be space for everybody to put their money in agriculture.
One of the beauties, as we discussed previously, in agriculture is obviously different sources of collateral that can come from machinery, land, grain. You mentioned personal liabilities. I was wondering, in your current outstanding portfolio, if you have those insights right now, can you share roughly like what's the split among the securities basically of your portfolio right now?
Sure. I just would like to mention that we don't do grain contracts because it is quite easy to breach them. So we don't see it as a really viable source of the collateral. What we do is heavy machinery, land, land with the real estate implements and sole accountability or personal guarantee. So if you look at our portfolio, so around 40% would be collateralized by land, around 50% would be collateralized by heavy machinery, and the leftover 10% are with other assets. We have a few loans where the collateral is trucks or vehicles, you know, so we categorize it as other or with the personal guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for the explanation. Just one follow-up question. Why do you say like those grain contracts, there's like it's easy to breach those agreements? Can you talk a bit more in detail about this?
Yes, so we learned it the hard way. In the beginning, we issued one loan with the grain contract. So the farmer didn't deliver the grains to the buyer. He moved them abroad, sold it for cash, and now it's a long legal process, you know, to recover the money.
Hmm. Okay, I understand. When we're talking about risk management, maybe you can just roughly talk me through the main steps of your due diligence process and how you operate in this area.
Sure. So firstly, you know, we do the Know Your Customer or KYC procedure together with the underwriting. So we onboard the farmer, make sure that he is who he says he is. We ask for the IDs, for the farmer's certificate. Then we get the financial information and we underwrite the farmer. So what goes into the underwriting is the financial data, the profit and loss statement, the balance sheet. Then in every country we operate, we have the connections to the credit bureaus to check on his payment history, on the open liabilities. Then we also have the expert valuation, you know, where we evaluate the assets, we evaluate the history of the client, the impeccable reputation, and then, you know, our in-house built credit scoring model assigns a risk level to each individual farmer. That's the whole process in the nutshell. And then, you know, just as the second safeguard option, you know, all of the collateralization takes place at the notary office. So the notary is like a second layer of the KYC, you know, just to make sure that the farmer owns the assets and that he can pledge it, that the assets are not pledged to anyone else. So, you know, everything is made sure to be white as possible, to say that.
Yeah, and it's important to add that, well, in each country we have local teams and local offices, so we take the whole process internally from initial conversation, signing the contract, to recovery if it's needed. So we build the competencies in every country, seeing that as our core of the business, I'd say.
Hmm. To me, obviously, being in this industry in a sense for many years now, you know, processes when it comes to collateralized items, when we talk about mortgage-backed loans, when we have like the collateral through, you know, agricultural loans and everything, the processes always sound very familiar. So I'm wondering, especially with the platforms that have a Lithuanian background, to which extent the regulator is kind of like, let's say, making a little bit of a framework for the due diligence process. So I remember with another platform from Lithuania. They said like, okay, there's just a list of certain valuators that you can use, or there's a, you know, there's certain mechanics that always need to be in place that are controlled. So how much is this entire risk process adopted by a regulator or by some external sources that is kind of a guideline for a platform like Heavy Finance? How much of it is really coming from your internal development of the core processes, if that question makes sense?
Well, I think I get what you're asking. So what we have as the regulatory aspect, you know, is the certain amount of the due diligence which we have to do on the farmer. So make sure that his reputation is good, you know, that we lend him the money, and we make sure that he will be able to repay them to the best of our knowledge. Now, then we have a separate law for the remote identification. We have the anti-money laundering law. You know, so these are actually coming not only from the regulator, but from the legal system as a whole, you know. And all the other aspects, like the processes, like the internal decision-making, it comes from the company, on the company level, not from the regulator.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's actually a good moment of pride when the new licensing is getting shape, and more companies are getting it, the European wide licensing that was actually mainly written by Lithuanians, and we've been living under a very similar legal framework for many years now. So for us to comply to the new regulation is pretty easy, and not much will change, to be honest. And we're waiting for it to get through the central bank as soon as possible, because we applied quite a while ago.
And I think you should obtain it by latest November. I think that's the deadline, if I'm correct.
Right.
Okay. Then we're in good spirits. In good spirits are also many investors that are already with Heavy Finance. When they look at the performance of the loan portfolio, currently there is 10%, almost 10% in recovery of the outstanding portfolio under management. Now, I'm offering you a chance to be very self-critical at this point. Where would you say Heavy Finance may have done some mistakes in or throughout this process? What can you say about the reasons why those projects have been defaulted? I know you can't generalize, but if you can, try to give an explanation on this.
So first of all, I think there are no mistakes which would be crucial. You know, every platform in its lifetime has to gather the data. You know, what Heavy Finance does is, with more and more data every year, we recalibrate the rating, and then we are getting more and more and more precise on the default prediction, right? So the last recalibration of the rating happened on 1st of April 2023. So we are getting there. Now, is this level high or not? It's an open question. When we launched the business, we said that if the economic conditions will be good, then we expect around 7% of defaults. If we are in a recession or the conditions are not that good, and then we expect around 10% of the defaults. So this is where we are now. The good thing is that all of our loans, like the majority of our loans, are collateralized by liquid assets. It's land or heavy machinery, and the farmers are in business, like they are business people. So what we do, we evaluate the business and its continuity, not the collateral. If you compare it to the real estate funding, so I think in the majority of the cases, it's a new company who builds a building, you know, and if you go to the recovery, you are just recovering the amount on the underlying asset. Here we have the asset and we have the functioning business. So now we have that in a year, our default rate is around 7%. In total, now it is 10, but the recovery is kicking in. For example, everything what defaulted in 2021 is now fully recovered with all the interest and the procedural interest and is distributed to the investors. You know, so every lending business is with defaults. There is no platform where, you know, you wouldn't get any difficulties with the payments, especially in the farming industry where it is highly volatile on the seasonality. You know, the majority of the farmers get their income 2 or 3 times per year. So every year we see an increase in defaults, like from March till August, you know, because this is where when the farmers are in the field, they are working, and then, you know, when the harvest comes, it's in autumn, you know, then they tend to cover the majority of the late amounts, you know. So when you invest in the agricultural loans, you know, you have to be ready to cope with the waves in the late payments and then them being actually covered. But as you know, on heavy finance, it is not free to be late. So the farmers are charged the delay interest. So I think the investors really love the farmers who are late, but then pay back with the delay interest.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and it's important to mention that generally we adjust the repayment schedules to farmers' needs. So there's principal amounts that we're asking them to repay in the months when they are actually getting revenue. So let's say it's a grain farmer, so we would ask to make a repayment in September or October, and then another principal amount repayment would be, let's say, February when they receive subsidies. But also they make a monthly interest repayment, so from our perspective, just to have them a little bit on the leash and have a constant flow of money, that they would feel that this is a very serious commitment that they have to be on it every single month.
Does any one of you know, like, top of your head, how many total projects are currently defaulted?
I think that throughout our history, we had 82 projects where the agreements were terminated. At the moment, I would say it's around 60 loans which are in the recovery stage.
And of those 60 loans, do you see, like, there's a certain pattern why those loans are late? Maybe it's like mismanagement of the cash flow, or what's like the, do you see like there's a common pattern maybe why those borrowers can't pay back in time?
There is no common pattern, but you could actually granularize the farmers into some kind of the bucket, you know. So the main bucket is, yes, the cash flow, you know. So the farmers expected the subsidies to be paid out by the end of May, so they had installments ready in April or May. But for example, in Lithuania, all the subsidies were paid out only in June. So this is what made, you know, a bunch of farmers late for a month or two. You know, then last year the story was, you know, that Russia invaded Ukraine, so there was a huge fluctuation, you know, in the grain purchase price. Just before that, you know, we had an increase in the cost, in the fertilizer cost, in the fuel cost. So adding all this, you know, when the usual case was that the farmer gets the money for the harvest in September or October, they were hesitant to fix the price to sell the harvest because they were expecting that the grain price would increase. So therefore, the majority of the farmers only sold their grain in December. This also made them, you know, a bunch of farmers were like 90 days late, but then they covered. You know, so, you know, you can't foresee such events. They are external. But, you know, again, on the good side, we always keep the farmers in the loop. We know what is happening. The majority of the farmers are not avoiding us, and they explain, you know, that yes, I know what I'm doing, I will be late, I will pay the delay interest, but the upside for me to sell the grain more expensively is worth it. You know, and we have other farmers who are avoiding the contact, so then you know that something is wrong. So there we have the underlying asset, you know, and we had quite a few auctions where the assets were auctioned off, the money paid back to the investors, you know. So, you know, we know that if you take away the farmer's land, you take away his opportunity to get the revenue. So this is what we are trying to avoid, and only in the cases where we see no other option, then, you know, we sell the underlying assets, and the investors get their money back, and the farmer goes to work.
Yeah, and we are entering that interesting period of time, July, August, when all the farmers will be in harvesting. Then we call them that you're being, let's say, 30 days late. And then you get an answer, if you want to help me with the harvesting, please come to my field. We will quickly do the job, and then you will get your repayment faster. Because, well, they have the money. It's just on the field now.
Maybe you could streamline this into another business field of yours then.
Easily.
Of those 20-25 projects that you recovered successfully so far, what has been the average recovery period?
The average would be a year. So this is like the usual process, you know, to go through all of the legal system with all the notifications, with the bailiff, with the seizing the assets, auctioning them off. So almost on every step, you have a month of waiting time for the other party to get a reply, you know. So yeah, that's a year, and we will have some cases where the recovery will take 2 years, 2.5 years. But these are more complicated cases, you know, where you see a farmer is trying to prolong the process as much as possible. But the usual case, like 80% of the cases, goes up to a year.
And do you have like a return on the recoveries? Like, what's the average?
So every month we publish a portfolio performance overview, and there we have a list of loans which were fully paid back that month. No, so now we have been doing it, I think, for 5 or 6 months already. So I can give you a range from the loans which defaulted and were recovered. The return range was from 8% to 19%.
Okay, that's why obviously investors are happy to see also some defaults here and there to have accumulated interest then. Exactly. All right. Yeah, and maybe to wrap up the recovery part, I was wondering, like, obviously there's, as we discussed throughout the interview, there are different underlying assets for the loans. One very bold example may be heavy machinery. I was wondering, like, if, you know, borrower defaults, and obviously there's like some huge machine there that needs to go to auction, how you manage the logistics, the time period. So besides from the cash flow issues where, let's say, a borrower is willingly, you know, postponing the repayments, what about other collaterals that you obviously need to go to auction with? Do you see, like, what are the differences in the recovery process, and how challenging is it to manage, let's say, the different collaterals to eventually get back the money?
That's a really good question, Danny. The thing is that we are not a leasing company, right? And those assets are not under our name. What that means is that, you know, the bailiff is like our outsourced employee who does the recovery. So we don't have to, well, in some cases we get involved, but in the majority of the cases, it's the bailiff's job to go to find the assets, to evaluate them, to list them, to sell them, and then heavy finance only gets the proceeds after the sale. So we are not involved there, but in the more complicated cases where we see, you know, that the farmer might damage the vehicle, though they are insured, you know. So we had one case where we sent the truck to pick up the tractor and bring it over to the parking place, you know, just to make sure that the asset is there, you know, because then if farmer does something to the asset, then, you know, it's a whole different process, because then it's not the administrative court, you know, then the farmer might go to jail for it. So, yeah.
Hmm. All right. And yeah, to wrap up the entire interview, once we got you on the podcast, Andrius, let's talk about the financial side of the platform. I remember beginning of the year, you had some seed financing. It was around 3 million euros, if I'm correct. What can you in general share about the financial strategy of the platform in terms of when you aim profitability, how your expansion course is looking to go on in the upcoming years, and just like in general, what the financial state of the company looks like at the moment?
Yeah, so as every company who does the rapid expansion, we are not profitable. We don't see us becoming profitable in the next couple of years. As Darius mentioned here, now we introduced the new product, the green loans. So this is also like a pivot from our main activities. We are backed by VCs. They see the potential in the company, you know, so I think that you can expect some future rounds happening also. No, but from this perspective, we see that we still will be growing fast. We are ready to endure the loss, but at the loss expense, you know, we are expanding our business and make sure that we have a good background for the future.
Hmm. Where do you see like the portfolio size roughly in the future, where you would need to grow to also level up with the increasing expenses so you reach then this profitability area? What's kind of the portfolio size that needs to be achieved until then?
Yeah, so you know, our main revenue is not from the portfolio, but from the amount issued, right? So what we calculate, you know, if we would reach 4 million issued per month with our current team, you know, we would be profitable.
Hmm. Okay. All right, good. I think that would cover so far the most important questions that I had. Obviously, towards the end, it's always a matter of, you know, the outlook, what's to be expected in the future. Let me know, final words from both of you. What's ahead for Heavy Finance? What's your target for this year, but also beyond? And what do you want to share also with investors?
Yeah, so first of all, the green loans is the very exciting product of ours. And together with the carbon farming program, we're planning to enroll 100,000 carbon credits hectares by the end of the year. It would mean 250,000 carbon credits generated mainly in Poland and Lithuania. One thing, it will actually push quite a bit their national agendas of becoming carbon neutral, but it will also give that very important proof and sense that returns are there for investors and impact is very rigorously measured. So it's going to be an exciting moment when I think that green loans will actually blossom and will become a much bigger product than it is.
Yeah, I agree with Darius. No, green loans have been here only for half a year. We see the huge potential there. But we are not getting rid of what we call now the brown loans. No, the regular working capital loans, because even if the farmer takes the green loan, most probably he will need additional capital in the future, as the farming is very cash intensive business, you know. So I think in the future, you know, what we'll see, we will see the increased pace in the recoveries, because now the majority of our loans reached the default phase this year in 2023 first half, you know. So yeah, I think what we will see, you know, agricultural lending proving to be a very good alternative investment and the diversification method.
Yeah, and Heavy Finance now is a team of nearly 50 people. We will hire some more because we're improving our product. So I do hope that by the end of this year, investors will see Heavy Finance in a little bit of a different spotlight. The platform will become much more convenient and easier, and I suppose we will go with the narrative to make investing seamless. And we really see that very important, because all the investors are busy with their own things. So what they really need is a very transparent but also very simple process of investing. So we're working on it, how to make your experience easier, and I hope to see that soon.
All right. Thank you very much. I think those were very good last words. Thank you, gentlemen, Darius, Andrius, for your time, for the insightful answers, and wish you continued success also for the future.
Thank you, Danny.
Thanks a lot. That was an interesting conversation.